This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back. Now, let's pick up where we left off.
We're Luna. And this is Gayotic.
Our podcast about absolutely nothing and yet everything, hosted by us homosexuals.
We all share one brain cell.
Oh my God.
I'm Josette.
I'm Katie.
I'm Naomi.
The three of us have been in a band together for years. We've been friends for a decade, and we've been gay since the beginning of time.
Oh, yes.
This week, they're back for more. Hotties and most famous humans in the world, Tegan and Sarah. It's part two, honey. So if you didn't listen to part one of our episode with Tegan and Sarah, then stop this right now. Stop listening and go back to our previous episode and listen to that first. Because if you decide this doesn't matter and you're just going to do it out of order, then you're just on the fast track to nihilism.
Okay, yes. It also makes me want to ask about, like, you know, I think we have had times already in our, like, comparatively short career where we can look at each other and be like, are we crazy or are we, like, not? It's like, are we actually as influential culturally as we think we are? Because sometimes it doesn't feel like we're actually, like, it's like, or because we're still not making money, you know. It's like, yeah. But I think we're kind of important and I think we're kind of great.
Yeah,
but it's not adding up. And yeah. I have to imagine that you guys have lived that like times a thousand.
Yeah.
So can you complain about that for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, complaints, please.
Yeah. A little more complaining.
I mean,
please.
I think it's, oh God, it's like a hard one to sort of like tease out. But I think that the sort of like financial realities of touring, part of what make them so demoralizing is that none of us know what anyone else is making.
Totally.
Or not making.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that that's the confusing thing. Like, you know, like a teacher isn't like, I wonder what Mrs. Adams is making.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm really having trouble making the ends meet, but she got teacher of the year. Is she making $1 million? Or is she making $43,000 like me? You know, like, there's no sense that there's equity because there isn't.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
We know that certain people are making like hand over fist more money than us.
Yeah.
And we also know that we're making more money than people.
Yeah.
And then there's this like awkward.
And then we're
like,
all on social media pretending it's 10,000 billion times more.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that the financial realities of our business are really confusing. We also don't understand, like, who's a songwriter and who's got publishing and who's doing the, you know, the corporates and who's getting big money to do festivals and how much was your production? I just think that it's, like, it's so disorienting. And because there's no way to sort of, like, fit yourself into that world, the only way to really do it is through these, like, very, like, public-facing arbitrary things. Like, how many social media followers do you have? Are you on all the Coachella, you know, things? Or did you get this thing? Did you get the corporate thing? Did you whatever? Like, are you wearing cool clothes? Did you get invited to the fashion shit? Like, you know, we have these things that we kind of use as comparisons. But, like, at the end of the day, like, who the fuck knows? I don't know how much money you guys are making. I can guess what you
guys,
might be.
Do you guys want to say, you know, how much money you guys are making?
One, two, three, you know.
Nope. But
here's the thing, right? Like, you guys are talking about sharing a hotel room. Tegan and I were very frugal. You know, we grew up lower middle class and it was like,
yeah,
everything was about save, save, save. And we shared a hotel room for, you know, way too long because the numbers just looked better when we would
Okay, hold on.
You know,
I want to jump in and
Tegan,
say.
Wait, Tegan, no, just let me say one more thing. Let me just say one more thing.
That.
Let me just say one more thing. When that changed. And I just want to say, I know what you guys are talking about. I know that like pain versus gain where you feel like you have a ton of visibility right now. You kind of feel like you're all over the place. Everybody kind of knows who you are. And you kind of want the financial part to feel at the same level. And it will. It just almost like it has to catch up to you, like in some ways. That's my experience, was that, you know, we kind of felt like we were really like riding high, but it still felt like things weren't quite making sense. And then it just kind of felt like a windfall for a while. And now we're back at the place where I'm like, you know, I'm just going to clean up my CV and maybe I'll survive for some jobs.
Yeah,
like, no, I'm just, but like, you know, maybe I'll go back to school. I think I'm eligible for a student loan, but no, I'm kidding. But
do you guys
I'm sorry. No,
Katie.
No. That's the end of my TED talk about how hard it is to be a musician in the industry. But oh, I know what I was going to say. When I met my partner, Stacey, she was 28. When I met her, and she was younger than me, but she was like fancy, bougie girl who like, you know, knew what was what. And she was like, when she found out how that Tegan and I still sometimes shared hotel rooms and that we had never, like we flew like economy and like, you know, we were just like really living like, you know, just like doing everything by the book, keeping the numbers looking good. She was like, get a grip. If you're going to travel around the world 300 days a year, you need to put yourself in business every once in a while.
We have those conversations.
We've reached capacity.
Well, we're doing the thing is, this is the, I think now, like when Silk came out, that was the first time everyone's like, you're everywhere. Definitely, like, we, you know, there was a month before Silk came out where it's like, can we sustain this business for another month? And then everyone's talking about how you're everywhere. And now
I'm like,
the
funny
first
that
time
my money is not everywhere.
Yeah. But this is the first time where we're seeing some sort of like profit. Like, but to be completely frank, and I like being completely frank about how hard it is in the music industry to like make money, where it's like last tour was called Frank. Last tour was the first time where like we were making money from playing shows.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but it is, we are trying to treat ourselves more.
Yeah.
A little bit.
You should.
I think I just want to backtrack for a second just to something you said, Katie. What I heard of what you said was like, you have all this influence. Mm-hmm. You're doing something that's important. And like, when does it equate to like making a living and doing well? And like, you know, when do the, like, you know, and I think honestly, the answer is for the majority of us, it never will. Mm-hmm. And I think like being just prepared the way that, we toured with Cyndi Lauper years and years ago, and Regina Spektor was on a couple of shows, and she asked Cyndi one time in front of like all of us were hanging out, and she was like, when does it get easier? Like, when do I stop feeling like I'm not legit? Like, when does it stop feeling like tomorrow I could just be back and be a nobody or whatever? And Cyndi was like, never. It never stops feeling this hard. You're always going to be chasing something, and it's always going to be hard, but you love music and that's why you do it. And I think I've tried to keep that in my brain, is that there will be, I think some of what Sarah was getting at is like, there will be times where the money catches up and there will be times where you feel like you're way too ahead of it. And I think also want to acknowledge, this is a tough time in the music business. This is a tough time to be a band, I think, getting started, but also a band like you guys, like this is, you're still in the first chapter, in my opinion, of your career. And you're still laying that foundation. Like, this is the year, these are the establishing years. Mm-hmm. And when I think about our establishing years, that was everything prior to, I would say, So Jealous. Like, that was a 6-year period. And those establishing years were extremely hard, very hard. There was not a week that went by that we weren't in tears talking about being done. Mm-hmm. And the next chapter for us, which was the next layer of, you know, our existence, was what I call the So Jealous, the Con, Sainthood years, which is another, like, you know, 8 years. That is when we like got to move to a bus, got to have our own hotel room, started to make money from tours. And like, that is, it wasn't a windfall, but it started to feel very different. It started to be like, oh, we can choose
it's
which venues. And
sustainable.
You start to be more comfortable. And then for us, when we hit Heartthrob, it was like going back to square one, because it's all about investment. It was just spend, because you just had to go everywhere and do everything. And you're going to play all these radio gigs. And guess what? They're free. You don't actually get paid.
Always.
And, so, and they're just like, who's paying for that then? And they're like, you. And you're like, so I'm paying. Okay. But like, I think for most of us, it's just always that back and forth of how much of this is about investment and how much of it is about profit. For Sarah and I, we've always run our company one way. Everything comes in, we just pay ourselves a salary and we don't touch anything. And then we can get through the lean times.
Yeah.
We can get through the fun times. It's like, and I don't equate how much we make with what value we hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
You know, because we're just not, first of all, because I just don't believe as women, as queer people, any of us are going to ever, like queer people are never going to get, you're never going to be valued the same as straight people. That's just the reality. It's like, because any mark you make on music, this is bleak, but I don't think this is a bad thing, but it's going to sound bad. But like, I just don't think your wins will be measured the same way.
That's a fact.
And never.
That's a fact. And so,
yeah.
But that's fine. Like, then just, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Like, it doesn't, you know, like, I think that's fine. I think that's actually just the way it is.
It kind of reminds me, I was talking to somebody about you guys at one point, and like, they said something along the lines of they were listening to an album of yours and they thought it was a greatest hits because it was like every single song is just amazing. They were like, I wonder like what that's about. And I was like, well, they're like queer, like women.
That's dead ass like, though.
Well, you don't really have a choice. So much harder. If you're putting out like,
you got to
so
put out
records,
something great.
You have to put out something great. And that actually, I'm really super grateful for that, to be honest.
For
and
the bar to be like, excellent.
Maybe
is,
I'm, what is that called?
Like, when you're kidnapped, but then you're like happy
Stockholm
about it.
Syndrome. Stockholm.
Yeah. Well, I think adversity, like adversity.
But I'm like, I love that.
And
like us
when the grade six girls used to take us over to their side of the school. Exactly. We were like, we got kidnapped, but really it's just been a weird fantasy implanted in us forever.
I'm being kidnapped by fascinating women.
You guys are going to have to work so hard.
Trust me, we always have been, I guess, continuing.
And it's going to have to continue.
Well, we did get in this for the money, though, so we are disappointed to hear that.
Look, there's money. The money comes. The money comes. It does.
Ten years into it for the money, waiting for the money to come.
It doesn't even need to be about the money.
Hey, you know, we can anytime you all want to call us and sidebar about how to make money, we can give you all our tips because there's a lot of ways to do it.
We're on OnlyFans
Let's
now.
Go.
Yeah.
Let's start scheming. I wanna have a fantasy talk about. We need to.
Well, first
we
of all, this episode is gonna make us millions.
People, maybe we'll talk over the break about. We need to plan like some type of massive convention or tour where maybe we're.
No,
I just said, you know, yesterday.
I think it should be a convention.
I just sent a link to our managers yesterday because New Kids on the Block, they're doing a convention in Chicago.
And they're doing a convention.
Hmm. Yeah.
And seems like they maybe took my idea.
It's $1,500.
Oh, no.
For all access. And then like regular tickets are $500. I got my calculator out. I was like, emailed the link to our managers. I was like, I want to do Tegan and Sarah Con. Like, let's do it.
I think the thing that we can sometimes feel icky about is like how much of yourself that you're willing to sell to make money. Yes. And we've always had really hard boundaries around that. And you know what? I think it's fine, but it is just the reality of our business where it's like, you are the commodity.
Yeah.
And how
yeah.
much of your actual skin are you
especially
willing to
sell? Especially if you're frigid, you have to turn into a big old slut.
Yeah. I'm absolutely a slut for it now.
You have to be. You don't have a choice.
You know what though? Like these are all things too that I think everybody worries about this, like, what's the line? Like, when is it cool? When is it gross? When is it, you know, just taking advantage and taking your turn? And when is it sort of exploitation or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but I remember somewhere along the line, like, I used to be really into, like, when we first kind of were, like, starting to be more, like, considered in the indie rock scene, I was, like, so obsessed with, like, comment sections under, like, the Stereo Gum or, like, whatever, like, all those Brooklyn Vegan, like, all that stuff. And I used to feel so sick and, like, devastated when people would say stuff about our band around money. Like, they'd say all sorts of crazy shit about us, but it was like, did you see they had two buses parked on whatever avenue and fuck them? And did you see how much their tickets cost? And
insane.
I would feel this anxiety. Like, I wanted to like be like, oh my God, you should see the margins on our tour budgets. Like, it is just like, we're out here like barely making ends meet. And it made me feel like I wanted people to know. And I think there's this like, don't ask, don't tell mentality about the financials of touring, because everybody is like, look, like Tegan just said, taking out the calculator and looking at how much things cost. And then, you know, oh, they sold, their tickets were $50 and they sold 2,000 tickets and they're making $1 million. You know, like, we all know
Sarah's
that that's
not very
not
good
real.
At math.
I was just using like a nice whole number, but I just think like there's also this thing of like, for a long time, it was like kind of like tacky to talk about money and tacky to talk about these kinds of things. And I remember hearing like you know, all the, like, the, back in our day, especially, like, there was, like, everybody's worried about selling out and, like, all of these kinds of things. And at some point, I just was like, I'm just treating this like a normal job. I'm taking the opportunities where they come. I know what the line is. Yeah. I don't feel gross about stuff. Like, I just have to, you know, I just have to say yes. And it, the now, you know, like, it's weird because, you know, even with these new opportunities, like writing a memoir and then making a TV show, I'm still sort of like vulnerable to like the feedback sometimes where people will be like, you guys, they made a TV show about you guys. And you know, that kind of like self-mythologizing, like mm-hmm. that we do, we have to do it because no one else is going to do
yeah.
it. No,
yeah.
there are not like 45 guys sitting around in Brooklyn right now being like, what band should I write about for the weird Barnes and Noble shelf that's filled with memoirs about men or biographies about men and yeah. memoirs about men and whatever. Like we made a decision somewhere along the line that we would make ourselves we feel important and we feel like what we've put into the canon is important. And so we're going to write about how we did it so that yeah. it's our amazing. Voice, you know? But I think it's the same thing for like declaring your worth and asking for what you need and asking other people like, you know, are you struggling too? Or, you know, where's the money? Like, mm-hmm. to let me know where, yeah. you know, whatever. Like, I think we have to be like, give ourselves like full permission to do that stuff because I think it's in not doing those things that allows us to stay poor, stay yeah. struggling, stay unhappy. Like if we give ourselves permission to talk about these things, then we can also find gaps and say like, this is not fair or this is disgusting. Or, hey, we're all out here struggling right now because like inflation, my God, it's so expensive yeah. to do everything right now.
Talking about it publicly also, like it just is a form of organizing.
Yeah.
Even, like,
yeah.
I mean, we're joking about talking about disclosing salaries, but it's like, no, get it out there.
Well, I honestly feel like people make, yeah. everyone's making money off of you. You're not making the money. I think that's the reality. Of
also,
our job.
The truth is, yeah. like, I think I don't know where to trace it back to, but maybe it's like post financial crisis, post Occupy. Like, I feel like there has been a sort of like larger open mindedness towards discussing how fucked yeah. up shit is for artists, like publicly. And it's not as shameful to talk about it, but that does feel recent. Even like talking about like, the Ticketmaster of it all, like yeah. when that shit went down, that was such a big deal that like even like someone as big as Taylor Swift was like, this is fucked up, you know, yeah. like how this shit works. But I want to
understand that Ticketmaster owned Live Nation. Did you guys know that?
Yeah it's
why didn't you guys tell me?
It's all monopoly. It's there, the monopolies like exist in the arts. It's like yeah. so fucked up yeah. and scary. But I want to say hey,
I need to jump in and just say, you guys are giving, like, you guys are truly giving, like, sermon after sermon. I know Sarah said she's an atheist, but it's just so amazing to, like, be able to hear your thoughts on these things. And I also want to say, I have such a clear memory of listening to So Jealous when I was in seventh grade. Like, there was just, like, one hallway, like, going to my locker and just being on my own and listening to your songs. And I didn't even know that I was queer at the time. I didn't know that y'all were queer, but I already like identified so much and had this sense of possibility when mm-hmm. I heard you guys. And then it was really cool, like watching your show. I was watching it with my partner and I just kind of got really engrossed in the world of just like your relationships and the story of your lives. And then when it gets to the part in the series where y'all actually start playing music, I was like, oh, holy shit. And they did this too. Like, I can't believe it's crazy. And it's so cool that you started a fucking band. And then I had this cool moment where I turned to my partner and I was like, they started a band. I started a band. I was like, and I did that. And that was cool when I did that too. That yeah. was pretty amazing.
It is cool.
Honestly, you know, when we went out to sell the memoir, what you just said is basically how we sold the book, in my opinion. We were just like, you know, there's a million memoirs to be published and there's a million people out there that could do this. But like, there really isn't like anyone that's like specifically for us, you know,
yeah,
that
yeah.
having a story that was set in a time frame, like especially queer people, that was so relatable. And we were like, I think like people who work in the arts, of course, or connect on that level are going to find it interesting. But like, there's just so many things about that time frame that we grew up in that I'm like so happy people relate to, like the longing and the friendship and the queerness and yeah. the music and all of that, you know. But like, to me, it's been like one of this last 10 years, but really the last five, but the last 10 years, I'll be generous and round up, has been so inspiring because of so many bands, starting with you guys, like so many other artists, you know, like we're good friends with Shora and, you know, I've spent like time with Hayley Kiyoko and like, it's just, there's so many artists that are right around your guys' age or a little bit younger who were in school when we were putting those albums out and like, you know, have been so kind to like give us props for inspiring them or you know, giving them hope or whatever the word they use is. And it's weird because it's a two-way street. You know, the first decade that we were making music, social media really wasn't, it didn't exist. And so even though there were lots of bands who we had things in common with, there was no access to them. And there were so few options for us. And it's just, it's so nice now to see how big that genre of music and that kind of artist like has grown, like that world has gotten. And it's so inspiring to us. And I think sometimes it's what keeps us going because I think we did venture into all these other areas and it was sort of like, maybe we don't need to focus as much on music. And there's just been so many wonderful queer alternative left of center bands and artists that have come out that are just so inspiring to us. And it's sometimes sad to me that we all still have the same problems and we're still struggling with the same stuff, but there's also, it's very healing for me. You know, it helps me to let go of some of the grief from the early part of our career. We felt so alone and so overlooked. And, you know, now I just don't feel that way. Cause I do think we had an impact, which again goes kind of back to what you were saying about having a lot of influence in the culture, but then not necessarily feeling like you're getting credit for it or getting the money for it. Like, hello, that's our next memoir. Like, it's just, it's like, but there's, but
I mean, you keep, had but you such keep going. A huge impact in so many ways. Naomi talks all the time about how Heartthrob really,
I mean, I think on pop people music
know.
In general.
People know. It's true. Know. I mean, like, obviously it goes before then as well. I mean, like for us, but like,
But take solace in the fact that like, prior to Heartthrob, we had no mainstream support other than a blip of time where Walking with a Ghost was on alternative radio. Yeah. And like, and we've never been nominated for a Grammy and we've never still got to play any award shows. No. And
it's like, fucking crazy.
Like, interesting.
So but here's the thing is that that's become like, again, this is like my queer mindset and my superpower is reframing things. But like, I'm proud of the fact that we've made music for 25 years. Who gives a fuck about Grammys?
Totally.
Yeah. Like you could be a band for 2 years and get nominated and win a Grammy, like, and then disappear and no one ever hears from you again. What matters is longevity.
Totally.
And also like our community, like if you are revered in our community, which I feel like you guys are at the heart of, it's like that is the thing that I'm the most proud of. You know?
It also speaks to what y'all were talking about or what Sarah was talking about earlier about like this idea of sort of writing yourself into the canon. I feel like that is, it's so funny that you say that because we talk about that all the time.
Yeah, with this last record
especially. That was kind of like our goal. Yeah. With the self-titled record was to be like, we are going to sort of rewrite history and pretend as though to place ourselves in this canon of both like queer culture and pop culture in general, even though that ultimately is like a fantasy. But like to know that, like the importance that y'all are feel that you have is completely real. And like, I feel like maybe we're getting to a place where we kind of understand that as well about ourselves.
I think we're as important as Tegan and Sarah.
No, I think we're as I don't.
You are.
But I think we are as important as we think we are.
Exactly. I'll never be able to tell.
You'll be. That's the thing is like you're important.
You know when you'll tell? Let me tell you when you'll tell. I truly feel this way. There's the beginning of your career, whatever that looks like. Maybe that's 3 albums. Maybe it's 10 albums. It doesn't matter. There's the beginning of your career where you feel it's an uphill battle. The money doesn't fit. You know, you kind of struggle. There's kind of like exciting moments, but you know, it's often really challenging. And then there's this kind of like period of time. It's pretty much a blip where you are perceived from the outside as having it all. Holy shit. Biggest thing in the, you just like, can it get any bigger? My God, you must just be like thrilled all the time. And then there's the part of your career where everyone's like, thank you so much for your service. We're going to have to put you down, lean into legacy. You're not getting Coachella ever again. I hope you had fun. You know, like it's just like that tiny, tiny little sweet spot. You know, you kind of were like, wait, but I was depressed during that time. Too bad. Doesn't matter. That's your good time.
It's always that way.
But here's what's great about the third chapter that Sarah's describing, which we're in currently. You do whatever the fuck you want.
Right. And well, that's true.
And if in the first chapter, which I call the foundational part of building your career. You make great art, you establish your identity and the kind of band you are and who you want to be, and you build a connection with your audience, then you get to have second and third chapters. Lots of bands don't. And I think that's sort of what I'm getting at, is that we never assigned value to the conventional measurement tools that the industry uses, because we weren't welcome in those places to begin with, right?
Totally.
The first 10 years of our career, 12 years of our career existed in a time where we weren't equal citizens. So we just, we'd never adopted those tools of measurement. Yeah. And so it's a great and exciting thing when we get welcomed in, but it doesn't matter. That's not how we measure success. And I think that's how
Tegan measures success with tiny little glass hearts at the end of her fancy vacation.
I mean, of course, that did beg the question of how you actually do measure success. And I'm sure that that's been a really evolving thing.
I feel like we measure success with like the people. Well, we haven't exactly gotten there yet, but I want the people who work for us to not have to break their back fucking backwards to do their job, because they're literally
we walking. Want them to be with us on the bus watching Survivor.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah,
I want
we want the people who work for us to be happy.
That's interesting. It's a really, really nice sentiment, but what do you really think, Wolf? What I don't mean that you don't mean that genuinely, but like really though, that's not why you're really doing this. It can't possibly be.
I mean, I think now that we're this deep into it and we have such like ride or die homies, that is a big part of it, because we've had the same crew for so long.
Yeah.
But no, but it's not. That's not what is like.
Thing is, I think the thing where it lies with them is that Muna has always been something that's outside of the three of us, and the people who work for us see the possibility of that thing, and they believe in it with their, you know, with all their heart. Like literally, think about Ivan. Like I think the thing is like us actually actualizing the thing that everyone has like seen, even ourselves. When we've been in our darkest hour, we've always thought about what we do is not necessarily like the ego driven thing, but like what Muna can represent to like queer people and anyone of a marginalized identity who has like needed to feel seen in some ways. So it's both. I don't know when I'll ever feel anything, because I'm devoid of all feeling. But
you lied.
That's not true.
I actually want to say I really get that. I get what you're describing, because you live off the fumes of what other people see in you and believe in you and feel for you. We've certainly felt that about just our fan base. Like they just felt like they needed another record. They needed us to, like, you know, we represented a lot, and I felt compelled to keep going.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you posted something about your relationship to work, like after your vacation.
Yeah.
That was really interesting to me.
What was it?
The last couple of years I've had definitely a lot of epiphanies or like revelations, and it's sort of all come to a head, which is just, you know, Sarah and I haven't done anything but work since we were 17. You know, we started working before high school, before we graduated, and we've been locked in a record deal from the time we were 19 until about a year ago.
Holy shit.
In the same deal?
Just re-upped again and again. We got sold once, but like, And this time we went out, we made a record ourselves, and then we shopped it around, and we went with a label that offered us a one record deal, because I was like, I don't want to make a decision for where I'm going to be the next 10 years. I want to decide where I'm going to be the next year. And I started, and it's not this isn't a sad sap story. Like, you know, we love being in a band. Like we have had an amazing time. We've made 10 albums and a million things in between. We've toured around the world dozens of times. We've had extreme highs. I don't, you know, there's some things that will just never, you can't rehab the first time for a lot of things. Like we've crossed most things off the bucket list. There's very few things left, in my opinion, to do except for make great art. And we just focus on that these days. But I think in the last couple of years, we definitely have tried to reorganize what we're supposed to be doing. Cause we had a really big career and a really big life, but it wasn't very full feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, how I've shifted that is that I cannot possibly spend 300 days on the road, or even 200 days, even 150 days on the road, and then expect my life to feel full at home.
Yeah.
It's just not going to. And I've just sort of asserted that like my legacy is not going to be how many records we sold or how many Grammys we got or how many tickets we sold or, you know, what famous friends I have. Like, those things aren't going to really matter. Like, if right. I perish tomorrow, like, my legacy is absolutely going to be in part the art.
I like how you don't die, you actually perish. You
perish.
I really liked that too.
Like, even it's beyond it's slow, tragedy. It's, she's actually perished, everyone. She didn't just die. It was a perishment.
I want it on record that even if I peter out and wither slowly, it's still perished.
Yeah. She's just... She got locked inside. She ate all the kibble. The dog ate her. She perished.
just to be clear, whether I perish or not tomorrow,
it sounds like a manifestation.
Would you shut the fuck up?
I'm trying to knock on wood.
I just really don't believe that my legacy is going to be like. It's not going to be important, like all those other things.
And well, you'll have perished, so I'll be in charge of it. So I'll get to decide what your legacy is.
But I do think that what has become more important to me is continuing to sustain that full feeling in my life. And that just means friendship and family and connection and art and telling stories and taking good care of myself and making sure I'm doing all the other things. And I'm not in any way begrudging the first 20 years of our career where all we fixated on was Tegan and Sarah, but it felt pretty one-dimensional to me. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think... I didn't understand that in my 20s, that like when, you know, older people in the industry, you know, mentors that we had said, like, be patient because you're going to start writing your best material in your 30s and 40s. You're going to have bigger and more fulfilling life experiences, and you'll go back and recontextualize and understand things in a different way and articulate it in a different way, and it'll feel different. It had nothing to do with you'll sell more tickets or you'll sell more. It's just you will be a better artist then. And I just feel like that's where I'm at. And so, yeah, I go on vacation or I take a couple weeks off and I don't look at social media and I don't look at my computer, and I just have this overwhelming sense that, like, I'm it. I'm here. I'm in that moment of my life. Yeah. Where, like, none of those things matter.
She's ready to perish.
I mean, I think it's just presence.
I'm like so, I'm really honestly moved, and I'm having like a thousand thoughts per minute listening to that, because it just feels really, and I know nothing is urgent, but that does feel like such an urgent message. And it kind of makes me feel it makes me feel inspired, because I think that feeling of fullness, at least, I don't know, maybe this is off base, but I see that like being in the first moments that you found a guitar and realized that there was something going on, like being able to write songs, that it was just something you could do, and it's an internal thing where there's a knowing there, and that is the treasure. That's really all you gotta.
I mean,
worry
I think
about.
That's like literally creativity is actually being aware that you're alive in this moment, the past, the present. I mean, the past and the future don't matter.
Yeah.
All that matters and all that you have control over is like this present moment that you have on Earth. And I think that's what true creativity
it's
like,
also,
is about.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like it's those, you like live for those, like those transcendent sort of like divine feeling moments of like when you're creating something that makes all the other bullshit, like when you're at a hotel and it's the worst ever.
Yeah,
totally.
Like makes
but it
kind of worth
it. Two
it.
Other things, like we've talked about before, Naomi always references this essay about how like being gay is like failing at your gender. What is it?
Oh, it's not an essay. Well, yeah, I guess it is. Monique Wittig.
Okay.
She's like a French 60s feminist queer philosopher, I would say, and like theorist. But yeah, it's like how one of her things is like, if you are queer, you are automatically a gender deviant. Like if you are born female and you are gay, you are failing at what it is to be a woman.
Yeah.
Thusly, like you are not a woman.
But sometimes I feel like
she's super, she's spitting that real. I'm bastard. Really
and cool, I'm also super aware. Like, I feel like if anything, like this conversation, it was interesting, like being in this virtual space together.
What,
as
like
a,
the dyke den?
Well, yeah. Being in the dyke den, I'm like, I am so sorry about my skirt, and I do like wearing my skirt, but. The femme privilege is real, but at the same time, like I still, and this is kind of abstract, but I still had this sense of like when I really accepted that I was queer and my path was going to be different, there was like kind of a death there, like an ego death of like, well, I'm not gonna be able to fulfill maybe my family's expectations for me or society's expectations for me. But mm-hmm. that is super, super liberating. I've kept something that's such a treasure in that, which is like, I'm actually not afraid. Sometimes I freak them out when I talk about like the end of our career or like the time we stopped touring. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm fine with things dying and things regenerating because mm-hmm. like, I don't know, it's not a failure to just accept what's working and what's not. It's not a failure to accept like what feels good and what doesn't.
I think we freak out because we're not there yet. I think
no, you're
why.
Not there. You're not there. None of us are there yet.
No, no.
But may I make a suggestion that like the word that I used to describe figuring out I was gay, like, you know, because I had obviously confusion, crushes, feelings, emotions, longing, obsession with girls. But like when I made out with a girl for the first time.
What is better than that?
Yeah. The feeling after, I described it the other day, actually to Clea and Laura, who write our show, and Sarah was on the Zoom as well. But I said that after I made out with Jamie the first time, her sister came and picked her up, and then Sarah and my mom took me to we went to Value Village, and yeah. I was holding up a sweater in the mirror and saw that I had a hickey, mm-hmm. and I'd never had a hickey before because like though I had like made out with lots of guys, I'd like certainly would have never let one fucking suck on my neck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And instead of being like, oh no, or like, oh, what if someone finds out? Like I leaned into the mirror and like, I can still see my face, like, and how hard I was smiling, like how mm-hmm. big of a smile and looking at it, because it was a physical representation of what I was in yeah. that moment. Yeah. And the joy, and yeah. that is the word, the joy that I felt in finally understanding who I was, like it overrode any fear or like anything. It just was pure joy. And the only time I've ever experienced that feeling again is when I wrote my first song. When I figured out that I understood how to put my hand in different like ways on the guitar and play a melody and then sing along and then played it for Sarah and she smiled at me and was like, oh my God, like those feelings are so similar to me inside of me. And neither of those things can be taken away.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, like when I think about legacy or I think about my queerness or I think about any of these things, there are some things that are just, they're in me and they'll never be gone. They'll never, ever, ever, ever be gone. I will always be an artist and I will always be gay. And I just know that. And the power that I feel in knowing that, it means no one has to agree with me. No body of artists have to vote to decide that for me. No record label, no agent, no anything has to happen for me to be who I am. I just am.
So fuck you all.
So fuck everyone.
And we fucking quit. And I'm crying on accident. Well,
so go fuck yourself, everyone. buy tickets to Tegan and Sarah Khan.
Yeah, let's go. I just want to say that I really agree with Tegan on so much of this. And I think we all search for that feeling again. And you know, we get little hits of it, if you will, yeah. like, you know, like fall out of love and you break up and you get into a new relationship and you're like, oh yeah, there it is. I met someone new. I feel that thing again, but kind of doesn't last as long as the other time, you know, whatever you start, you start doing the thing and music, it happens too. I mean, my God, try squeezing fucking blood from this stone after 23 years. It's hard. We could literally be playing for all of Earth. Like they could be like, we've got all the people on Earth and like song three, I'd be like, I wish I was watching the latest episode of The Last of Us. But do you know, like, it's just like, I'm sorry, like you could have the whole Earth's population. You could have all of them there and I will start to think about chips and a glass of wine. Absolutely. And going home and watching TV. It's just
about getting a snack after. That's what life is.
It's just what it is. The only thing I will say, and I'm not, and I'm saying this as like a, you know, I spend all my, so thus far, I've spent 41 and a half years listening to people talk about how magical having children is and like blah, blah, blah. And it mostly, whatever.
Can I ask why you said 41 and a half years?
Because I had a child 7 months ago. So,
okay.
So like okay. Since I've had the child, I have somewhat,
got it.
I've sort
Sorry.
Of had to amend some of how I used to feel about people who talked about kids. Okay. There was, first of all, let me just quickly just jump out front of this and say, find most people with children annoying. People be like, you don't like kids. I'd be like, don't like people. That is why I don't want children, because I don't like people and I don't want to be forced to hang out with them all the time. Yeah. And I always found like people with children really smug, and like all the things that they would say, I would be like, I don't get it. I don't, whatever. I have had a really positive reaction to being a mom. Like things I said earlier in this conversation, you know, like it's actually made me feel very out and public and performative in this really exciting way. But I just want to also say that like, I so deeply love Sid and feel something that sort of transcendent thing that we're talking about. Like when you first, you know, realize you're gay, or you first make out with somebody that you know you're probably going to love, or you like played that song the first time and you thought like, wow, I don't suck. I can't believe I got the magic power to like write music. Like, yeah, lucky me. I feel that way sometimes about Sid, but not because I'm like, he's so amazing. Like, it is amazing. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just like kids, you see them in increments. It doesn't seem as magical, but like one day he's a meat sack that just lays there. And the next day he was sitting up and holding a cup. And I was like, it's a miracle.
Like, it's for the record, Sarah used to say that her cats, like, looking at an iPad was a miracle.
Listen, so what? And I'm just saying, I love my cats. I think they're beautiful. Holiday is, she's the love of my life. But watching a human person grow and change every day, and that they love, like watching him learn to love us and me love him, I love the experience. But what it has made me access again is my own childhood. Like, I think about my childhood, I process my childhood, I look at pictures of my childhood, but I don't feel my childhood. Mm-hmm. With Sid, I feel my childhood. It's this like, it's hard to articulate it, but it's like, I have almost like found memories or something. Like when I had to first start like putting zinc on his butt, you know, like so they don't get diaper rash, I had like visceral like associations with the smell, because I think I just remember it from like, I mean, I haven't been changing any kids' butts and like zinc and like whatever, but I had this like feeling or whatever.
Is zinc Desitin? Do you remember this? I might be ratting on myself right now. But
I slept through chemistry, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you think, I barely went to high school.
I'm talking about the brand of stuff that you put on your butt.
I don't know anything about it.
You might have a different memory of it, but for me, it's like so rooted in some kind of like unearthed memory or whatever. Or even just like sometimes when I'm like at all the relationships I've had, like, you know, my sister, my many girlfriends, my friends.
My many girlfriends, my, you all my legends.
way to brag.
You legend.
No, but like all my things, you know, that I have had. One thing that as soon as like I'm like holding Sid, I love him, and we're like he's laying on me and I'm like hugging him or whatever. Like I remember what it feels like to be a little kid and hug somebody and hold somebody. You know, like,
oh
I,
my God.
Like I feel like that unearthed memory or that feeling of safety or surrender or whatever it is, like there's joy in that. And I think like, and I only say this as like the example of like, I love music. I feel very lucky and privileged to get to still do this. But like, I think aspirational to find other things that let you tap into new joy. Like, and you might be like chasing the dragon in music forever, like, and that's fine. But like one thing that I didn't know when I was in my 20s and 30s, like freaking the fuck out about maintaining our career, growing our career, competitive, whatever, was that I potentially could just go be like minor good at something new and it would give me as good a feeling. Like seriously.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, like I seriously, like if I'd known just like having some fucking ferns in my backyard during the pandemic made me feel like fucking, you know, like euphoric, you know? And I'm just like, if someone had just said like, you're gripping real hard on this career of yours, did you ever think about just getting a hobby that you're really good at?
Can I ask another question?
No.
Can I ask, I'm so curious just because, you know, we haven't all spoken together before, but like, what is the worst, which we have to change because this has been delightful, but what's like the worst thing like about your crew? Like, what's the thing you guys gripe about the most?
I think
that's
we're
the worst thing. You guys are the same as us. I can't believe that was the question.
What are you gonna, I have one.
Well, I would say, I think on a day-to-day basis, perhaps just because we love to complain.
Yeah.
At least too. Me and Joe do not want to do anything that we have to do almost ever.
That's so, Sarah.
Some things can be the worst thing, even
like
if
what,
it's
like press,
awesome.
Meet and greets, radio, like interviews. Like,
I think radio is probably top five one of the worst things ever that you ever have to do.
Yeah, radio sucks.
But so we also
the most draining for
me. Well, I think you leave the way that I try to think about it now is like just like all the bad shit that we have to do, at least we have each other. And we do in 6 to 9 months after it happens, we do laugh about it because it's so utterly humiliating.
Yeah.
The things we've experienced are so completely.
Yeah. We hate feeling humiliated.
The dog thing. That was one of the
most. Why do you humiliate you? Like photo shoots or going to radio?
Crazy shit. It's like. we have to stop. We're throwing it to a break. The break is happening now. Let me start by saying this show, Gaiotic, is sponsored by BetterHelp.
How are you guys doing right now? Speaking of BetterHelp,
not good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, living in the world as we're experiencing it now can often be, you know, at times you'll feel elated and at other times you'll feel very depressed. And I think we oscillate between those two emotions frequently, and it's hard to do that by yourself.
Definitely.
Well, that's why it's so nice to have a therapist that you can talk to help bring you back to what you care about in life or just talk about, you know, the everyday problems of existence.
Yeah.
You know,
we are very pro therapy as a band. I'm also pro like getting help where you can find it. And what I love about BetterHelp is how accessible it is for people to try. I have a lot of friends where BetterHelp was like the first therapist that they
I was going to mention a friend
found.
Of ours who had a BetterHelp, who found his therapist through BetterHelp as an individual that travels quite a bit and needed to be able to do it over the phone. And yeah, it's like starting therapy can be a lot like starting to date and it makes you feel very nervous and you do have to find the right person and BetterHelp can, you know, kind of facilitate that process a little bit.
Definitely. So we encourage all y'all to visit betterhelp.com/gaiotic today and you can get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/gaiotic. Go to therapy, y'all. Go,
please.
You're listening to Gaiotic? Go to therapy.
Put the podcast down and get help with BetterHelp.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, we're
the
back.
The break's over.
We're back. I'm just going to spill tea. Like we just played a tour in the UK. It was sold out. Like it was a sold out
fucking
tour. I saw
that. It looked amazing.
And we didn't have any fucking production. And Naomi and I are playing like I'm playing a song runner. This is why I'm like I'm throwing out my fucking back cuz I'm going to throw my whole goddamn cock into the ring every time I play. And I'm just like, I need lights. I can't be doing this shit
the house
anymore.
Lights right. Person hates their fucking job.
Yeah, we
they always
hate
their job.
We
you know when it
that.
Feels
they
like,
it
okay,
so
it's like Runner's High is a song where it's like, you're basically at a rave. And it's the lights are giving
the lights are as important
theater
as the
production.
Music.
You know what I mean? Like middle school theater play where you're just exposed. That's embarrassing.
Feeling exposed in that way. I think we did. We've done a few things that like are just
shrimp
so
cocktail.
Funny. Yeah. Like performing on the Paramount lot, doing an acoustic. This was many years ago, but like performing an acoustic show at the Paramount lot.
Yeah. Everyone's eating shrimp. No one gives a fuck about you. You're playing the most heartfelt song.
Put it on a rooftop in Manhattan where a helicopter is landing and no one can hear you. And they're just
there.
Like,
not okay, a helicopter, like, but
we played in Montauk and there was a bunch
oh
of like
God.
Rich
people
bros literally
in front
doing
of us.
Cocaine and like trying to grind on
this
girls
chick
who were
was
playing
throwing
ballet.
Ass
Tiffany
on this
Trump,
dude
Tiffany
like you would
Trump
not
there.
Believe. It was insane. Yeah.
I've got one.
Okay.
It's a combination of a couple of the things you don't like to do. It's a radio show, but
you
it's
love
a,
it.
But it's at a venue, but it's sponsored by a condom company, so all the people in the venue blow up the condoms, make balloons, and spike them at you all.
In a way,
plot twist, I would love that.
I love that. I love that. I think I would love, we love, I guess one thing that, the thing that's
straight, sorry, straight men. Sorry, straight men.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I would be, the streets aren't anywhere near us unless they're like 60.
No, they are.
Do they even have any dental dams there, like, to be conscious of the...
No, people haven't seen a dental dam since 1863.
I ain't never seen a dental dam. I used a dental dam for recently.
Whoa.
What?
I know.
I'll ask you about that later.
Can you believe? No, it's because we were being really, really good and we were waiting. We were getting tested before we had sex for the first time, but the testing was taking a little long.
Yeah, and the horniness. Horniness could not wait.
And the horniness was extremely high, and we were being such good angels.
I'm so impressed.
I'm absolutely stunned.
I've never liked anyone enough
to use a dental dam. Like, no. If they were like, I'd be like, let's just wait a little bit longer. That's
But
I would just have sex.
Haven't you had?
I would risk it all. That's what I was saying. I was like, I would just risk it all.
Guys, we can't wait.
There's a problematic thing with people with vaginas that they're just like, I've had a couple exes be like, we're not giving each other STDs. Like, the lesbians are not.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Are you looking at me for a reason?
You didn't say that to me. I don't think I, yeah.
We know.
At the time. Because we were just virgins. I mean, we weren't, but we were, you know.
Sure. Can I ask another question about?
Yeah.
No, because I have a question for you.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Because you said that you haven't liked someone enough to use a dental dam, but I'm joking. Haven't you had?
No, I mean, I wouldn't use a dental
for all your ex-girlfriends that are listening.
I want to hear the question.
The question is, haven't you had sex with someone like when you were maybe in high school, another time? Haven't you had sex where it's like you kind of did have sex, but you had underwear on?
Katie loves to talk about this.
Yeah, Katie
brings this up. I swear to God,
Katie, like, this is me realizing, like, do I have an underwear on, like,
you
fetish?
Have a
kink?
No.
Yeah, but does lingerie?
I guess lingerie count.
Me
too. What you do? I totally know what you're talking about, the underwear on and
underwear
fetish.
On.
I think it's actually vaginal sensitivity is what you actually are experiencing.
Okay. It's more than that, though. It's more than that. It's also like that you're so rushed and so eager, you can't even take the time to take.
Yeah, but everybody's had that. Why, you guys,
jizz
you
in your pants.
You guys aren't like finding a brave new world.
Is. Well, guess what underwear is?
It's underwear is a dental dam.
No, it's not.
Basically a dental dam.
No, because
if it was latex, it would be a dam.
I'm not ripping out a pair of underwear from a bag and putting
this
on.
It's not the
my
thing
many
about
girlfriends.
Being so. There's two points to this. The other thing is being so rushed that you're so goddamn horny that you jizz in your pants. The thing you're talking about is concretely choosing to jizz in.
Let me tell you something.
Like, you're so out your pants.
The fact that you know where, like, when I think about being a young person having sex, first of all, I wouldn't have even known. The only reason I even knew what a dental dam was because when I came out after high school, my mom, in a spiteful, mean way, brought a bunch of dental dams wherever you got them, put them in a basket with some pamphlets about STDs and put them in our basement suite where Tegan and I were paying rent and living. And I remember, so I do have a trauma story, but I also was like, even now, I'm just like, I walk by... Like, can you get them on Amazon.ca? Because, like, I wouldn't probably ever go in somewhere and be like, is there a dental dam around here? I mean,
I think Katie's the only one who actually knows where that is now.
Yeah, where do you get a dental dam these days? Let the kids know.
Well, now I feel like I need to clarify that it wasn't, we actually just use, like, plastic.
But that's not a dental dam.
That is not a dental dam.
What the fuck? And it's probably ineffective.
That's not a dental dam, and that's not effective. Even I know
that. It's not effective.
I'm going to look up on Amazon.
Use like a Ziploc fucking black
what is
saran
a dental dam then? Isn't
would
it?
You let a guy? Would you let a guy walk
saran
around
wrap?
Earth knowing that they were? If they said, "I just used some saran wrap around my penis," do you think that's gonna work?
Well, that's not
tie it off with a rubber band.
What kind of plastic
did you use? Everyone, calm down, Katie.
It was
what kind
medical
of plastic
grade
did you use?
Plastic.
Why do you have medical grade plastic?
Because I have a good reason, but I'm not going to share it because it's my partner has medical grade plastic.
Okay.
Well,
so
now we're assholes.
I guess my answer then for you is that I have had I've either had boring sex or irresponsible sex. I've never had a dental dam.
Yeah, I've definitely.
I also
want to
just confess once again that I did kind of just use the phrase medical grade plastic. Like I know what that means. And everyone just accepted it.
Yeah, but
it.
We did. You could still, this is the thing.
I don't actually know.
We believed you completely.
Yeah, like, I feel kind of bad about how well that worked, where we're just like moving on.
I just want to believe you. I felt, personally, I felt like I had to believe you because I felt Sarah specifically was really coming at you there about the dental dam. So yeah, I felt I needed to take your side. So I was happy to go with you.
How could you not go after her? How could you not, though? Wow,
I wasn't going after you. And I also, when you said, you didn't just say medical grade plastic, you actually used it in conjunction with, I'm not going to say disclose because my partner has it, which made my brain fill with reasons why they might have just like a
murderer,
like Dexter kind of like plastic, or like, what do you mean? Like a tarp, like you cut up pieces of a tarp and just,
yes,
it was a tarp actually. That's the real secret.
I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to do a hard left and maybe Katie can roll with on this. Oh, what did I want to say? Well, I want to talk about touring. What do you have on your rider? What do you love? What do you love that's on your rider? Do you look forward to like digging into some snacks after the show or no?
This is the secret. In my opinion, this is the secret.
You take the buyout?
No. Well, we definitely are very mindful of how much rider we get. We don't like food waste, and we're really mindful about like buyouts and those kind of things, because I would rather take the cash. But no, our secret with our rider is that we basically kind of have a boring rider.
Yeah, we
and
do.
And then we just it, like go super, like that's been our thing, is like a super basic, kind of boring, because then you don't eat all day long, because it feels like Christmas Day backstage, right? You're just sitting around waiting all day long, and so you just eat and eat and eat and eat. So we just get like the super boring stuff, and then we supplement every once in a while with like, please get us 12 large bag, party size bag of chips, and then like just like a ton of wine. But mostly we just have like real like turkey jerky and dry almonds, like just really boring healthy shit, so that we don't eat junk all day long.
We always, like on our bus, we have like liquor and chips and like fun things.
But that's a supplement. It's not the daily rider. We really try to keep it basic. What's what's the craziest shit on your rider? Do you have anything weird?
We don't have anything crazy. I
think the craziest thing about our rider is
like how many different drinks we like.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're fucking boring.
We're boring. We don't drink on tour.
I mean, I don't know which one of you said it, but that you guys don't do meet and greets. You guys don't do fan meet
and greets? Well, no, we don't do any paid meet and greets. And like after the show, we stopped meeting fans because every time we would, we would get
COVID
sick.
Too.
Before COVID, we would get sick because everyone wants to give you a hug and then I have a cold for a week. The only reason
why we're, we've been doing paid meet and greets now since Heartthrob era in 2013. It is our margin at this point. It's actually it's how we're actually making money. And it's interesting because
really fun.
Well, yeah. Well, but
you
we
have
don't,
fun with it. I
yeah, but we
to
do. We
it.
Do. Okay, so like we do. This is no judgment, by the way. I mean, everybody has a different thing. So when we first started doing them, we used to do the thing where you like line up and talk to people, but it would like go on for like seriously like hours, and we were like, this is not realistic. Getting sick kind of feels scary a little bit sometimes. It's just a huge labor for the crew. Blah blah blah.
Too much touching.
So we stopped doing that. What we do is a sound check where they get to. Well, sometimes they would come to soundcheck, and then that kind of didn't work either, because we would just be like, we'll never want to play any songs in soundcheck, and we're just like, don't care. But so now we soundcheck, and then once everything is done, the new model that we've been trying that we really liked is that after soundcheck is over, they load everybody into the venue, and then Tegan and I play some acoustic songs, and then they submit questions, and we do like a Q&A, but we have all the questions so we can decide like what we actually want to talk about.
Yeah.
And then they just hang out and they get like some swag and they get whatever, but it's like quite literally.
Yeah, they get a gift bag, they get early access to the venue, they get line free merch shopping, and it's fucking,
but it's truly like the thing amazing. That's like, it's actually the thing that we're making money on right now.
Yeah.
And it's something that people genuinely really want.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun like to like, it's like lower stakes than like, so one of the things that was really hard sometimes about doing the meet and greets where you're talking to people is that you're like, oh no, I gave that person a whole minute. And then the next person, you kind of feel like you're rushing them because you're like, that was a long time. So like, I didn't like that things kind of felt like they didn't always feel like equal. And it just felt like certain people will just take more and certain people will take less, and it's awkward and whatever. And one of the things I like about the acoustic like Q&A thing that we've been doing is it gives us a chance to really like interface with like the hardcore people that, like, we know them. Like, some of the people, like, there's this one guy that has seen this on this tour that we just did. It was like he hit his 150th show with us. And it's,
oh,
like,
my God.
So they're like people that, like, we've known them for, like, forever. Like, they're,
yeah, growing up with them.
Yeah. And so, like, it's nice because it kind of gives them a sort of, like, it gives them a sort of, like, vantage point that's, like, different, but then also we can quickly, like, chat with them, and it's, like, nice. And then the questions I find just really hilarious, because people do get some time, they do get time before they submit the questions. They do it a few days in advance. The questions are super thoughtful and interesting and fun. And then we also just get to, like, play, like, old shit that we're never going to play again in our live show, but, like, it gives, yeah, us a chance to kind of, like, do workshop other things. And then financially, you know, we were talking about this earlier where we were, like, going to do this offline, but it's, like, I'm a big advocate of it, because if it feels like it's tough, like, if you're financially looking for that extra little boost there, I think there is no shame in doing paid meet and greets. I think it's a beautiful way to give back to the community. And it is a way to change the budget. It just looks different with VIP in it. It just does.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And it's intimate. I don't think there's any shame in having a value applied to, like, a higher degree of intimacy, like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The That's two what people oldest want. Professions are, like, music/entertainment and sex work. It's like,
I was just
about
to
no
say,
shame in either of these things.
Exactly.
It's like, people want to feel closer to you.
If there was, like, an indecent proposal style plot line in my life right now and somebody offered me $1 million to have sex with them, I would be like, Tegan, who? You know, like, yeah. I would just
wait.
Like,
why? Wait, what do you mean, Tegan? Who? I'm not having sex with you. What do I care?
No, I'm saying I'd quit the band. Like, I'd be like, I'm not in the band anymore. If I just
Tegan, or who?
Yeah, like, so what? You'd have to sleep with them forever? I don't understand.
No, you sleep with them. No, I'm saying
sleep with them once, and then they also said, Sarah, you have to quit the band if you're going to sleep with me.
Well, obviously, if
I have an idea.
Okay.
We should have people, everybody write in who is willing to spend that money and change their lives.
Do I have to? My only question is, do I have to use a dental dam? Do I have to use a dental dam?
You have to use a dental dam.
If I want to, after
it's sponsored by a dental dam.
Dental dam or surgical grade latex.
Oh my God, can dental dams sponsor this podcast?
I think you'd have to find a specific brand.
Is there even a fucking name of brand?
Well, clearly, clearly they're
medical
not
medical grade plastic, just as good as a dental dam. That's my ad.
We're gonna become dental dam truthers, like they don't actually.
This is fucked up because I just feel like
this is we've
been
talking.
This has been pretty fucked up, you guys. We've been talking for so long, and I just feel like I didn't actually ask anything that I wanted to. Like, I didn't ask
you
a single question about songwriting.
Well,
like,
we'll have to do this again. It sucks that this is the first time, in a way. Like,
yeah,
it's actually ridiculous.
I guess we have to move in with you guys and help you raise your child.
Come and hang out.
This happens a lot. Like, I'm having so many competing thoughts. I feel the same. It feels like we barely scraped the surface. But one of the stories that we tell a lot about our career is that for the first decade, and it still happens, but certainly for the first decade of our career, we were compared to Ani DiFranco. Article and every piece. And, you know, I understand that probably for our first or second record, but as we moved into pop and indie rock, it was always such a weird thing, but it never, ever, ever, ever diminished how much we loved her. If anything, it just made us feel mortified for her because she was probably just like, God, get these kids off my dick. You know what I mean? Like, it was such a weird, it was like, if it felt somehow like we were responsible for this comparison. Anyway, we've never met Ani. And so, like, decades went by, and recently we got the opportunity to interview her. It was just over Zoom, but it was this weird full circle moment because when we were in high school, you know, we had tried calling the Righteous Babe hotline, like, you know, the number on the back of Ani DiFranco records for her record label, to ask her for advice.
Wow.
And, you know, here we were, like, 23 years later, finally talking to her. And it was this weird moment where I realized, like, what a gift it is to be able to talk to other artists and be able to share and to commiserate. So that was a very long-winded way of saying that it was such a pleasure to get to talk to you guys. And we're so proud of everything you're doing and so thrilled for you at, you know, all the success that you're, you know, achieving. And you're brilliant songwriters and performers and wonderful people. And we just are always here for you if you need anything.
Marry us.
Mic drop. Yeah.
We need to get married.
Yeah,
no, we love
sure.
you so much. Like, you truly are our parents. I know that's like a cute online slang, but, like, yeah, you really, really are our parents. And we would not have anything close to the career that we have if you guys didn't exist. So,
well,
we love you.
I appreciate that. And let's definitely, I don't know if we need like a monthly Zoom to just talk shit.
I think we should.
My question is, when are you guys going to visit us on tour?
Yeah.
I'm looking at your tour dates right now. There's so much. I'm so excited. We're just about to announce some dates. So I'm going to see if there's some crossovers.
I would die.
I would love to come and see you guys.
Wow.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. This was so much fun.
It was such a pleasure, you guys. And hit us up anytime.
Yeah, okay. I can't wait to see your toilet.
Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Gaiotic is a production of HeadGum.
Created and hosted by us, the band Muna, but mostly we're known as the famous podcasters from the podcast Gaiotic.
Our producer is Anya Kanovskaya.
And our associate producer is Ali Khan.
If you want to prove that you love us, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever people review podcasts. We might even pick your review and talk about it if it's a really good and really nice one.
You can subscribe to Gaiotic on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher,
wherever you get your podcasts.
New episodes drop on Hump Day, Wednesday. One of the greatest days of the week, baby.
That's right. We do this regularly because we have fucking discipline.
You're listening to our voices right now, which sound pretty good. But guess what? The face cards don't decline either. So head over to our Instagram at whereismuna and like one of our photos. I mean, truly any dopamine hit we can get is helpful.
Meet you right back here next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.